Hi everyone, I'm Banu and welcome back. And today I'm joined by Aisha Armstrong. You'll see that this is my second recording in 2024. And the first one was with Greg Daines. And we tackled some of the previous topics we've tackled before, but with a nuance and a challenge. And with Greg, we delve into whether a customer experience is really what drives retention. And we argued that it is not. It's actually being able to measure value and show results to the customers. And today we are tackling a topic with Aisha that we've, again, have done before around productizing your services. But I think you'll really enjoy the topic because it's a completely new angle around sort of what is the impact of artificial intelligence. And we'll leave you with some tool sets around what are things to avoid or think about as you're looking to productize service offerings. And very happy to have Aisha join us. She is the co-founder and executive chairman of Vectaris, which is a subscription-based advisory company supporting B2B services companies to productize their offerings. Aisha is also a strategist in the B2B SaaS space and is a wealth of knowledge in regards to blending technology with strategic business planning and has an interesting perspective on the evolving landscape of professional services. She's also the author of the book Productize, which is a guide to turn professional services into scalable products. And stay tuned because we'll be offering some of her books at the end and you'll find out how you can get access to that. So welcome, Aisha, after that very, very long introduction. Welcome to our show.
Oh, thank you, Banu. I really, really am excited to be here today.
Fantastic. Why don't we start with you telling us a little bit about yourself. Tell us about Vectaris and how it came. By the way, am I pronouncing that correctly? Vectaris, I think, right?
We pronounce it Vectaris, but it's a made-up word.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, how Vectaris came about being and sort of your experience and the kind of services you provide to your customers.
Sure. Well, we have to go back about 25 years when I started my career working for an organization that really pioneered the productization of management consulting. So they provided benchmarking data, best practices research, executive education, all in a subscription model that was designed to reduce the amount of money that companies had to spend on management consulting. And I started my career in a product development role. Then moved into product management and eventually product leadership. And that's where I spent the bulk of my career before co-founding Vectaris in 2018 with one of my former colleagues because we saw an opportunity in the market that more and more B2B services companies who had provided custom services now wanted to figure out how to standardize, automate, scale those services so that they could grow faster. So that was really our hypothesis when we launched the company back, 6.5 years ago. And since then, we've worked with about 100 professional services companies around the globe, primarily mid-market, large enterprise professional services firms across all different sectors, marketing agencies, accounting, legal, consulting, architecture firms, you name it, guiding and supporting their productization journeys.
That's awesome. I mean, I've got to tell you that just the fact that we met and discussed what you do brought up, opened my eyes to the fact that I've always thought about a product manager as something that's in a SaaS software provider, but to have product managers in the context of service and management consulting and other industry, it was great. And I know you have a wealth of knowledge just even discussing what that role, for that role to be effective in a service organization, what they can do. But I digress. We'll get to that maybe at another time. But for today, I know in preparation, You've put out a number of white papers, and obviously you have your book and a new one coming, I think. And so I read your multiple of your white papers, but the white paper titled Generative AI, which we will, by the way, provide a link in the show notes so that audience can refer to it as well. You speak to a recent research that was done on impact of artificial intelligence on professional services. And I'm going to actually read this section out of the white paper because I thought the information and statistics was very, very informative. And you say in there that the research was looking at estimates of time and labor across 17 different industries, found that of all industries, professional services is the most vulnerable to disruption from generative AI. Over 41% of existing work can be automated using generative AI. This includes not only software developers using tools like GitHub and Copilot, but also professional services across legal, management consulting, accounting, architecture, engineering, and marketing using generative AI to improve the speed and quality of research, analysis, and creation of a large part of their core knowledge work. So that's all from your white paper, but that was like it was shocking to me. Like 41% is going to be automated within a professional, like an industry that is dependent on its people and its their knowledge. 41% of their work would be automated. So what are some of the ways that you are seeing AI reshape the PS industry?
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up, Banu. And, you know, what's even more shocking is when I share that statistic, which labor economists use by looking at kind of time studies and activities. They came up with that estimate. The companies that I'm working with say they think that number is low. So I was talking to a head of product at one large professional services organization. He said their software developers are now using generative AI to create 85% of their code base, 85%. Architecture firm told me they've got this new proprietary software that they've entered into a JV that can do 50% of the work that an architectural engineer used to do. So really what we're seeing here is technology that is different from other types of automation that we've seen in the past. Because now with AI, what it can do is it can actually make inferences and judgments based on pattern recognition. So it's not just allowing us to capture and categorize knowledge more effectively. It's helping us make better decisions, or decisions that only humans could previously make using that information. So I do think that, you know, that the headlines that talk about professional services being the last industry to be disrupted by technology, I think those days are over, and that AI will disrupt a good portion of professional services. And I don't think I'm speaking, using hyperbole. Again, based on the conversations I'm having with leaders at other pro-serve firms.
Yeah, that's amazing. And again, in the white paper, you do reference that obviously with this change, service leaders have to fundamentally rethink how they create value. And I talked about the other podcast that we did around value and being able to show results is really critical to repeat business, right? So based on that, what are some of the biggest pressures and opportunities that you're seeing for these service leaders that have to look for ways to change and adapt?
So I'll start first with the pressures. So obviously with this new technology, if you're not starting to experiment and actively use it at your firm, you risk being disrupted by competitors who are using it and can therefore do things more efficiently, lower cost. So that disruption, I think, is very real. I think this is actually, though, good news, because what I hear from a lot of ProServe leaders is that labor continues to be a sticky part of their business, that they have low retention rates, that they can't find enough qualified professionals to do work. So if this is a real opportunity to maybe take away some of that labor pressure, this could be a really good thing. I think the other pressure that professional services firms are finding is a decline in customer loyalty. So you go back in time, people used to go with the same professional services provider year after year because of relationships. But now procuring professional services is becoming more professionalized, and the procurement department is getting involved. And that means that looking more closely at pricing, structure of service agreements, that's putting downward pressure on margins. And it means that we need to find new ways to compete, not just on price, but perhaps new solutions and services. So that gets to the opportunity side, which is anytime there's something as big and disruptive as what we're seeing right now with AI, it also means there's a huge potential for opportunity to develop new solution offerings.
And do you specifically reference four categories for PS firms to be able to leverage and incorporate AI to become more productive? Can you take us through each of those areas and the application of it?
Sure. Yeah, happy to. So the first one is efficiency, what we like to call automating the mundane. And that's the one that's getting the most attention right now. So that's the, writing 85% of the code base using GitHub's Copilot, or automating, low-level tasks, whether it's in accounting audits or legal discovery or copy creation, things like that. And certainly, some of the larger firms that have access to early access programs from the tech providers have already made some big splashes in terms of announcements on how they're using generative AI to be more efficient. So you see things like Deloitte talking about their DartBot, or Marcia McLennan talking about their LenAI, or things like that. Those are all things that help professional services workers do their jobs faster. It could be around doing research faster, analysis, creating content, anything like that. So that's that first level of, that's first category, again, automating the mundane, getting more efficient. The second one is knowledge work quality. So if you're able to automate some of the more mundane tasks, it frees your professionals up to spend more time doing complex analysis and thinking for clients, and helps, also helps free up more time to understand client needs, aspirations, build relationships, things that are really, if you think about it, uniquely human, and should be areas where people get more job satisfaction. One leader recently shared with me, the most common motivator for professionals in their working lives is to deliver high quality advice to their clients. And AI actually makes this possible, not only by giving us more time, but by giving us more information to do better analyses, make better recommendations. So that's the second category was improving the knowledge work quality. Third one is around workflow. So using AI to perhaps decrease the amount of time that we spend in meetings, or, trying to figure out weaknesses in our own business models. And then the fourth one is what I'm most excited about, and that is new growth opportunities. So this is where firms realize that AI allows them to solve new problems for customers that they couldn't previously solve, and either creating or white labeling AI tools to use with their customers, or helping their clients understand how to use the AI tools that are already out there.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. I think, again, I bring it back to the whole value and results piece. All of these enable, I think it brings both value to the consultants. The consultants live. I mean, I'm a consultant, and I live for that challenging, right? Being challenged to provide even more value to my customer. And so by taking some of the mundane out and giving me the information that is easily accessible to make my analysis richer, it brings value to me as a consultant, as an employee, but also to the customer in terms of their investment. So it's exciting, because I think it can also be very scary, right? When you look at statistics like 40, 50% automation, you think, oh, well, where's the job of the consultant going to go? And where it's going to go is it's just going to become richer, and it's going to enable them to make sort of richer and more valuable results for their customers. So I love that. It's exciting. It's extremely exciting. But with that comes a lot of change management considerations, I would imagine. If you're making that shift, there is a lot to consider and drive to make sure that change is effective and that you're driving adoption. And I know you reference 6 considerations to effectively manage change. Can you walk us through what those 6 are and why you think they're important?
Yeah, and I'm so glad you brought that up, because that is one of the things that leaders who've made significant investments recently in AI tools are now concerned about, which is how do we get the level of adoption to make these technology investments really worthwhile and to then see this growth that we're hoping to see. So I'm really glad you brought that up. So the first one in kind of the 6-part change management handbook is workforce transformation. So you're right, roles are going to change. New skills will be needed. And there may be some existing roles and skills that become less important or need to be restructured. So for example, business domain knowledge to check and edit the quality of work created by generative AI will become more important. Administrative roles will probably become less important as we've continued to see. But honestly, I think we're not going to know probably for another 18 to 24 months, really, what are all of the new skills that are going to be needed. We do know that new behaviors are needed. So we need people who are really interested in experimenting, who will, you know, get in there and just start playing with the technology to learn it so they can learn quickly. And they're able to think kind of more broadly about what are the potentials and not coming at it from a place of fear. So we may not know all the skills yet, but we do have a good sense of what behaviors we need to see in our workforce. So workforce transformation is the first one. Second one is culture change. So as you mentioned, this does require professional services firms to think differently about how they create value. And also, what are the behaviors that they value? So in the past, a lot of professional services firms really valued knowing the answer and providing near perfect deliverables to clients. But things like knowing the answer or being having a perfectionist tendency can really keep a lot of organizations from experimenting with technology and new solution ideas. So we need to create more kind of tech-friendly, product-friendly cultures in our ProServe firms that prize learning, collaboration, speed, things like that. Third big change in the change management playbook are go-to-market changes. So right now, one of the most frequently asked questions I'm getting from organizations who are running hard after AI is how to manage changes in pricing. So for example, does it make sense to migrate to flat fee pricing or value-based pricing as our billable hours are now decreasing because we're using generative AI to use some of the work? But the generative AI costs more money, so the bill rate should go up because that needs to be reflected. So a lot of really interesting questions around that. And I think the most important thing is to focus the conversation with clients when you're having conversations about pricing and how you're using Gen AI, to your point, on the value that's created. So, you know, trying to get away from how are we solving the problem and more focus on what's the value or the problem that we're solving. Fourth component of the change management playbook, again, gets to managing client expectations. So beyond pricing, we do need to be having discussions about how we're assuring deliverable quality, accuracy, how we're protecting sensitive data and information. So that's kind of table stakes and really cannot be skipped as part of this. The fifth one, again, back to clients, is co-designing and co-developing with our clients. So as we're thinking, especially about that fourth category of how do we use AI to generate new service opportunities, new service lines. We want to be talking to our clients and understanding how are they starting to think about it. What are some of the problems that they wish they could solve that perhaps technology, if we apply it in the right way, can help solve for them? And then the last component of the change management playbook are performance measures and rewards. So are we, still focusing on billable hours and utilization rates, or are we starting to focus on margin? Because if we're using technology more, our margins should be improving for our projects. And seeing some really innovative ProServe firms take emphasis off of top-line revenue and instead put it on project margin, which I think is great. We also want to be talking about, again, those behaviors that we want to see. Are people actively learning? Are they moving quickly? Are they collaborating? You know, embracing the technology, embracing intelligent failure. Again, those are all attributes that we want to see in our professionals, and we'll have to reward those if we want people to change.
I mean, every one of these are topics on their own that can have their own podcast series. But I love the fact that you've made workforce transformation number one. I don't know if that was intentional in terms of priority, but to me, that's such a key component, right? To be able to sit back and redefine what your job descriptions and requirements are of specific positions, just because the world has evolved and what you're embarking on next requires a different set of skill sets. So at least as you're looking for new talent to account for that change in your requirements is such a critical component. But every one of these, right? I mean, the performance measure and reward is another really important, like rethinking what you're rewarding. Is it still the same basis of measurement? So I love them, and maybe we'll come back and dive into each of those. But as companies then, as professional services organizations are taking on looking at productizing, right, and product offerings, and then looking at how artificial intelligence and other technology, right, doing that digital transformation and seeing how they can drive more efficiency and therefore value, it's tough, right? They've got change management that they've got to think about, but they also, it's a huge undertaking, and there are some mistakes that are typically made. What are some of the pitfalls, like things that they should watch out for, the mistakes to avoid, because you've seen them many times before?
Yeah, unfortunately, they're pretty predictable, which is why we spend a large part of the book Productize outlining what we call the 7 deadly mistakes of productization. I won't go into all of them, but I'll talk about some of my favorite ones. So the first one is developing products or solutions that don't solve an urgent or expensive customer problem. And sometimes we see this a lot with new technology like generative AI. We get so excited about the solution, the technology, that we forget to ask, does the customer really need this? Like, what problem does it solve? Is this a problem that they're willing to pay to solve, or would it just be a nice-to-have problem to solve? So this is where we try to work with companies to teach them kind of fundamentals of design thinking, to really understand what are the pain points that customers have, what are the root causes of those pain points, and then design a product or a solution after they're very clear on what are the customer needs. But it breaks my heart when I go into an organization like, okay, we spent all this money developing this new solution. No one's buying it. And it's like, oh, it's because nobody wants it. Nobody needs it. Like maybe one client asked for it. And
yeah, so they, you didn't do like, market analysis. You right. didn't do market analysis. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It makes sense. Yeah.
So that's a big one that I like to talk about. And then the other one, I think this is especially relevant to professional services firms who are productizing, is letting this fear of cannibalization of services revenue get in the way of the success of the product. So typically, if we're selling a product alongside a service, it's probably at a lower price point than the service. And there can be an irrational fear that a customer is only going to choose one. They're not going to choose both, and they're going to choose the lower price thing. Okay, first of all, that typically does not happen. And second, there are ways to mitigate that by either making sure your products complement your services versus compete with them, or if you're going to develop products that perhaps do compete with your services, that you are developing those for a different market segment, like a more price-sensitive market segment. So there's some really easy ways to mitigate that risk of cannibalization. But again, I see a lot of companies develop great products where there is a market need, and then they fall flat. They don't sell because they sabotage. The sales force sabotages it, or the delivery team sabotages it, because the price point isn't the same. The top line revenue potential is not the same, even though the margin is so much better.
And I would assume, like, again, it comes back to measurement and reward as well, right? In terms of how you're rewarding your sales team and your consultants in selling those items as well, those products.
Absolutely.
Really have enjoyed the topic. I do hope we'll have another opportunity to continue the discussion. But any other thoughts you want to leave with the audience? I know you have another book coming out. We will be providing an opportunity for the listeners to ask for the Productize book. But tell us a little bit about your book that's coming up and how it will be a continuation of Productize.
Oh, great. Yeah. So this spring we'll be launching a new book that's called Launch Boldly. And it's all about the go-to-market motions that a professional services firm needs to develop, the capabilities, the strategy, if they're going to successfully bring productized services or pure products, products as a service, alongside their services, because they are very different selling motions, marketing motions. So that's coming out this spring. It'll be called Launch Boldly. And I think the last thing I'll say, just kind of taking it back to generative AI, which is getting all the attention right now, but productization in general, is that if we're thinking about it just in terms of efficiency, then we're missing the whole opportunity. We're really underselling the potential of technology to not only make our jobs as professionals more enjoyable, but to really create entirely new opportunities for how we serve our clients, create value, and grow.
Yeah, I love that. I know in your white papers as well, you provide a number of examples, right, that speaks to, you know, there is a data that can be pulled by the customer versus a consultant interacting with it. Maybe you change your model. That becomes a subscription pool, which is still a revenue stream, but allows the customer sort of to take advantage of that data that they can easily access through your technology. So a lot of great ideas and concepts in your white papers as well. Again, we'll provide the links to that. But let me go to the last question. I wanted to ask you if you can tell us about a mentor, someone who's been impactful to where you are today, career-wise, personally, et cetera.
Yeah. So I love to talk about Professor Amy Edmondson at Harvard Business School, not only because of her personal impact on me, but also because of the research that she's put out in the world. So she's the one who really developed this idea around psychological safety and how important it is for innovation, which again is a key part of successful productization, technology and development. And she also just came out with a new book that I love called The Right Kind of Wrong. And it's all about how to design intelligent experiments at our organization so that we can quickly learn whether we're innovating, trying to apply new technology like AI, but do so in a disciplined fashion so we learn the right things and can move on.
That's great. I love it. Thank you again for making the time and joining us. If the audience would like to read Aisha's book, Productize, we're doing a giveaway to the first 10 listeners that click the link in the show notes. It's a great guide for any professional services firm looking to deliver highly customized services, new product development, and commercializations that are typically outside of their core skill processes and mindsets. So thank you, Aisha, for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Banu. Thanks for having me.
Of course. As always, thank you for listening to the show. If you have any follow-up questions for Aisha or myself, please feel free to email them to podcast@cantata.com and we would love to answer them. Thanks again. Have a great day.
If you enjoyed this podcast, let us know by giving the show a 5-star review on your favorite podcast platform and leaving a comment. If you haven't already subscribed to the show, you can do so anywhere you get podcasts, on any podcast app. And to learn more about the power of Cantata's purpose-built technology, go to cantata.com. Thanks again for listening.